Welcome to Growth Marketing Today, where marketers, designers, and product owners level up their growth marketing chops from experts in today's top startups. Here's your host, Ramley John.
Welcome to the third episode of Growth Marketing Today. Today, I have somebody special for you. I have Sylvia, VP of Growth and Analytics at 500pixel. Now, a lot of the growth people that I talk to, designers, product, marketers, they talk about Sylvia like she's been around for a while because she is somebody that a lot of people really look up to because of her past experience and just knowledge that she brings to the table. She started her company at telecommunication companies and she quickly moved to eBay. Now, I don't know if you know what eBay is about. But eBay is one of the biggest companies out there. There, she pretty much worked with a team to build out the matching algorithm at that company. Then she moved to Google. Well, I hope you know the company called Google. And she pretty much implemented the same playbook with her team. She was working with a lot of data once again, doing a lot of growth stuff, traveling between the Mountain View office and the Toronto office. And then she got recruited out of that by the CEO of 500pixel. His name is Andy. And there now she's heading up and blowing up the growth and analytics team at this top startup. Right? Once again, 500pixel is one of the top startups that I know worldwide. If you don't know them, check out 500px.com. I'm so excited because Sylvia is very smart, very growth-driven. She's the typical like growth marketer person that I know that's data-driven, but also very people person. I don't want to hold you back anymore. Let's listen in on my chat with Sylvia, VP of Growth and Analytics at 500pixels. Check it out. Hey everyone, I have Sylvia here from 500pixel. She's VP of Growth at 500pixels and Analytics. And I'm so excited because she is the right person to talk about the growth process and experiment. Less about hacks and more about frameworks. Hey Sylvia, how are you doing?
Good.
Oh man.
So happy to be here.
I know, it's beautiful here in Toronto. It's beautiful. I just want to get to know you a bit first before we chat about 500pixels. Can you tell me a little bit about your career? Like how you got to where you are right now? I know it's probably a long story, but I love long stories.
Okay, well, I can give you a longer story. I went to the University of Waterloo for systems design engineering. And because that program is a cooperative education program, I ended up working, I guess, in a bunch of different tech areas. And after graduating, I decided to go and do essentially analytics consulting for some of the larger telcos in Canada. So at Bell and at Rogers.
Yeah.
And if you know the telcos in Canada, the slow moving red tape environment was not for me. 2 years in, I got extremely fed up and was given the opportunity to work in-house at eBay.
Nice.
At that time, doing their site analytics for the .ca platform. So I took that opportunity and ended up getting under the US entity. So started doing work for the .com site and analyzed not only buyers and seller activity, but also worked a lot on their best match sort algorithm, obviously to kind of increase trade across the border. So did that for around three and a half years or so. Then I left to join a local startup called Oanda.
Nice.
And that they're one of the larger kind of foreign exchange platforms out there. But I guess if you're not a day trader, you wouldn't really have heard of it necessarily. And there I started their marketing analytics infrastructure from scratch. So I was kind of the third person on the marketing team at that time and worked heavily with their business analytics engineering team to kind of build out attribution infrastructure, build out a warehouse, and really leverage data to help them build their business. In 2010, I had my first son. So I went on a mat leave. And unfortunately, by the time my mat leave was over, there had been enough changes with the CEO leaving the company that my team didn't exist when I got back. So some of my team members had left to join Google. So I went with them and did, I mean, I wouldn't say this, we took the same playbook, but we did kind of take some of the stuff that we had already been doing at Oanda and implemented that at Google for their SMB flagship products. So I was on the SMB marketing team working on optimizing the funnel for AdWords,
nice.
You know, Google Analytics, did a stint for Android at that time doing the analytics for their Play Store. So yeah, it was a great experience learning how to kind of scale a team globally. So our team had 30 people in you know, all across the world, from Asia to South America to Europe. And not just, so yeah, dealing with the global challenges was definitely a great experience. But then also obviously having the experience of the complexity of the products that Google has,
yeah,
was great learning for me. And then story kind of repeated itself. I went on mat leave and I couldn't or didn't want to travel down to Mountain View every month anymore. Mm. So my team was all there. I was the only one sitting in Toronto, mostly because of personal circumstances. Yeah. My husband has his own startup here in Toronto, so I've been staying here the whole time. So the travel just got to be too much with two kids at home. So I started looking again and ended up again in the Toronto startup scene at Scribble Live. And they do content marketing software.
Nice, yeah.
So I was the VP of growth there and essentially built a growth and marketing team, again, trying to leverage data to help other companies determine their content strategy. So a lot of that was working with large, large databases and a data science team out of New York through the Opinions acquisition that we did.
Wow.
To put two marketers' hands, you know, data on, you know, how well their actual content program is doing, which I think even now, even with all the technology that we have, it's hard to measure.
Yeah.
And then from there, I ended up at Farmer PX.
Nice.
This is a long story.
No, it's good.
To the conclusion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andy, who is the CEO of Farmer PX, we actually were friends from a while back. So he was telling me that there was a large growth opportunity here at Farmer PX and drew me in. So I got sold.
You got sold.
Onto here. And Fiverr PX is, I mean, you can look at it as, well, at its core, it's a community for photographers. But a lot of people, when you just look at the product, it's very akin to Instagram. So it's like a high-end version of Instagram. But it's a lot more than that in terms of actual photography functionality and components. So we have a business that does... Actually, am I getting too much into this all this other stuff right now?
No, keep going.
Oh, okay.
I think this is cool.
Okay. We have essentially three lines of the business. One is the community aspect, which is what you would see if you go to fiverrpx.com and there's beautiful imagery on the site. Photographers pay a membership to be part of our club, so to speak. So that's one side of the business. The other side is our stock photography side. So we sell the imagery to brands. And the third side is our studio business, which is actually a custom shoot part of the business. Almost like Uber for photography. I say almost because so far we've been focusing more on the larger contracts with larger brands. I think at some point we will probably be breaking down to more self-serve model.
And you're doing growth for all three business, or you're particularly focused on?
I'm particularly focused on the community side of the business. We have different heads of each. So.
Okay. I'm finding it fascinating. I also went to University of Waterloo for math and comp sci. And a lot of growth people I'm finding have engineering and math background. And I also know, I noticed you did a master's in analytics.
Yes, predictive analytics, yes.
So I'm curious how that's helped you. Because it's weird. Like, we're not traditional marketers. A lot of growth people didn't study marketing. They either studied math, engineering, or even psychology.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how has that helped you as an engineer, as a predictive analytics?
Yeah, there's obviously with the digital age, there's just a lot of data out there for marketers to really optimize on the programs, right? So I think that background in, I'm not a big fan of just saying, hey, any one degree is going to make or break your career.
Right.
But the critical thinking and I think some of the ways you start thinking about the world when you're in those programs is actually really applicable to solving marketing issues.
How do you see the world differently, like as an engineer versus like a traditional marketer, if you could?
Well, I think, it's just a lot of frameworks and putting things into models.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's modeling the world. Especially with someone like me who's... The systems design degree was all about designing the world through systems, you know, or looking at the world through a systems lens.
Yeah.
Everything is interconnected. There's inputs, there's outputs, there's stuff that you do in the middle.
Right.
And it's using that lens to kind of, I wouldn't say pull or manipulate users, but it is to kind of influence people's behavior and decisions, right?
That's interesting. No, that's true. And that's what I'm finding, the difference between growth marketing and traditional marketing. I know you did product marketing at Google too. Would you say?
I wouldn't say that any one is more important than the other.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like I think the art aspect, I mean, you can model the system all you want. There's components that are totally unpredictable, which is usually the people, right?
The people are unpredictable.
People are unpredictable. Yeah. I think the art of marketing is just as important as any other piece, if not the most important thing. So... Yeah, I'm not definitely one thinking here, you know, old marketing versus old versus new marketers, you know, and having a war on that. I don't really think that that's a good way to look at it.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
But I'm finding like I don't think they're competitive, but there's a difference between the traditional marketers versus the growth marketer you're talking about looking at input and output and looking at huge data set and just creating a framework and model. What would you say the difference is between the
two? I think the difference still, at least from a job market perspective, the way I see it is that the demand for the more quote-unquote growth marketing aspects, especially in tech, is still higher than the supply. So what I feel like is a lot of us who are in growth marketing, I mean, we can pat ourselves on the back because we feel like we're on the rise, so to speak, just because of that imbalance. But I feel like you work at Red Academy, you would know, as the education and the prep that we do for young people entering the workforce, as that shifts towards this, it's going to change.
Yeah.
And hopefully it will balance itself out more. Yeah.
It's fascinating because I find like the trend in Toronto is always like a few years behind San Francisco. I know San Francisco, Silicon Valley, they've been talking about growth marketing, growth hacking far longer than Toronto. And we're just a little bit behind them.
Yeah. I would say it's also following the trajectory of the tech scene in Toronto to begin with, right? I would say that in the last few years, we have started really growing as an industry inside Toronto. Yeah. And I think with that, will start coming some of these things.
Yeah. You're talking about education for growth marketing and just this whole new way of thinking about how to approach acquiring and retaining and activating users. What would be for you like critical skills, like critical things that marketer of tech companies or marketer of the future should have if they're in school right now?
Coachability and learning how to learn, having the mindset, a growth mindset. To me is probably the most important thing. Because it doesn't matter what you know now, it's gonna something's gonna change and some new thing is gonna happen within the next month that's gonna require you to change. So being able to be flexible and to keep up with change and wanting to learn yourself and keep on growing is probably the most important thing to me. Other things that I would throw in there is curiosity.
Yeah.
Like having curiosity for your users, curiosity for different types of behaviors and just looking in the data to find insights and being curious about things that you hadn't thought of before.
Yeah.
It's also very important. What else would I say beyond the list?
Sorry, I'm putting you on the spot here.
Well, I don't know. I could list out all that other stuff that I give you in that talk, but I don't know if I want to rhyme off all of that.
It's fine. Let's talk about the data piece. I think that's getting more and more important. Everybody's talking about being data driven. That's like such a buzzword right now. What does it mean for a marketer to be okay to dig into data for you?
Like, what does it mean to be data-driven?
Yeah, would you say?
Well, I think it's just always considering the data that you have when you're making decisions.
Yeah.
Right? And not really making decisions purely by gut or by consensus of the team or by... Probably the worst thing is by whatever the higher-ups in your company have designated.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Even if it flies in the face of data, right? But the thing to know is that data can only ever tell you so much as well.
Yeah.
And it only ever tells you so much about your current systems and how things are currently running and never really gives you a sense of opportunities and opportunity cost specifically. A lot of that, I think, it does come down to you and your team having the experience to be able to say, this is the time when we don't look at data.
Right.
And we are going to go back. We are going to go by what we know. Just in terms of where the industry is going or what our users have been telling us, even though that might not be very quantifiable.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, more qualitative stuff. And that's also what I'm finding is that there's got to be a balance between gut decisions and like too much dependence on data might not give you the full picture.
Right.
Versus like, I feel heretical for saying sometimes you do have to make a gut decision based on your experience, right? Like it's... Nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about, hey, sometimes you have to trust your gut.
Right.
Everybody's like, oh,
well, especially if you're starting out, a lot of times I do, like when I do advising for startups, a lot of times when I ask them, do you have data for this? And the answer is just no.
Yeah.
Either, they didn't have, or the user base isn't large enough for it to really mean anything, or they haven't collected it, or they don't have the means to collect it. So, at some point you're going to have to make some decisions without that.
Yeah, which is scary.
Like the data in the end is a luxury, right? Like not everyone has that.
Right, no, it's not. Sometimes it's expensive. People have to buy the data. But it is scary. It's scary like, we're making a decision based on what we believe and not necessarily what we know. Which, like you said, most startups are in that phase of customer discovery.
Yeah, and validating what you know at that point probably is the best thing you could do.
Yeah, that's true. Let's talk about 500 pixels and even Scribble Live and other places. What's your growth process look like? I know you chatted about it before in your talk here at 500 pixels, also at the Growth Hackers Meetup here in Toronto. But what does your growth process look like?
Yeah, so I do have a 8-step process, but I won't go in too depth into that. I mean, the short of it is basically making sure that your team is set up for success.
Yeah.
And a lot of that goes down to, for me, setting up a multidisciplinary team where you have the functions that you need. So that's engineering, product, design, data, and marketing together, as opposed to creating organizational silos.
Mm.
So having that kind of minimum viable team put together.
Interesting.
And then putting in, sometimes I hate to use the word process on it, but it is actually putting in frameworks for how they work.
Yeah.
So that when you fail, and you will fail, there's guardrails about you picking up, learning from that failure, and then doing or retrying again.
Yeah.
Because there are no silver bullets. So the most you can do is kind of put in enough around the team and or setting up that team so that they can get past those failures.
It's true.
Yeah, that process also includes defining the culture to say, hey, everyone needs to have a growth mindset. And then, I mean, depending on the company, you would want to set that up differently. But to me, it's a large part of how you are able to grow is the culture of the team.
Interesting.
So divorcing that, I don't think we talk about that enough in terms of growth hacking. Well, a lot of us go to, especially even the word growth hacker, it's very individualistic.
True.
It's very, I am going to take my computer, I'm going to hack away at the system and do something. Majority of the cases that never happens, you need a team.
Yeah.
So that's probably the most fundamental piece. And then after that, it's a lot of product processes, honestly. You know, making sure that you have sprints, cycles, and then retrospective reviews and that kind of thing to make sure that things are operating efficiently. And then also from a data perspective, making sure that you have things modeled out. You know, having a funnel, knowing what your actual goals are is also very important. Are you going after profitability, monetization of your users, or actually just user growth, right? Yeah. Like which one of those? And within those three, even if you say users, do you have a real definition, right? Is it activated users, confirmed users, ones who have actually, you know, whipped out their credit card? A lot of times when I talk to startups in Toronto, that isn't very well defined.
Yeah.
And if you don't have those definitions down, I think that's probably your first step, because if you don't have your goal, you're not going to reach it.
So true. You said two things there that really like struck me as, wow, that's very insightful. The first is, you said something about failure, like you're going to fail. And I feel like, and I believe that too. And my philosophy is you learn more from failures than you do from successes, right? But you talked about culture too, because failure is not a good business strategy, right? There's got to be some kind of culture to almost embrace, not necessarily do something for failure, but more so if failure does happen, what do we do about it?
Yeah, it's just making sure that you actually aren't afraid to fail, because your path to that success is going to include some failures,
right?
The worst that can happen is for you to fail and then not get back up again.
Yeah.
We used to do, and I don't know if this is specific to Google, but Google had research on the objectives and key results, like OKR setting program. And the data that was floating around was just basically saying, hey, if you set a stretch goal of some sort and only reach 20% of it,
right?
That 20% is still way more than you reaching 100% of a goal that was a lower bar. So that's the thing. Like, if you stretch the goal high enough and you quote unquote failed, that doesn't necessarily mean that you failed overall.
Yeah.
Right? That still could have been way farther along than what you would have done if you didn't try. So the thing is to not be afraid of trying and of failing. Because most people don't set that stretch goal because they're afraid that they're going to fail.
How do you cultivate that with like C-level leadership? Because for a lot of companies, some of the companies I've worked at, when you don't achieve something, you're slapped on the wrist. But I find the best kind of companies are the ones where the culture is, let's stretch our, not just ourselves, but as an individual, but as a team. And your VPs or CEOs are not going to penalize you for not achieving that stretch goal.
Well, in the end, I mean, as a business, you're probably always going to have someone accountable for business results, and you know, no one else, like the CEO needs, or somebody at the VP level is going to get slapped. So, I mean, that I don't think necessarily is or should change, because someone needs to be accountable, I think, in the end for the results. It's the how you got there.
Wow.
Is the question.
Yeah.
Right.
It's the journey.
It's the journey of getting there. That's what I'm suggesting is that you take the failures along the way.
Yeah.
Not to say that you're going to take your failures always.
Yeah. True. True. What other culture would you suggest? A team, a growth team. I love how you put it. It's like you need a minimum viable team, right? What is the kind of culture you need to cultivate in that team? As a VP, you have how many employees are reporting into you? And what is the culture you're trying to build into that team?
Yeah, the growth team here through the glass door. we have people in the growth team right now, growth and slash marketing together. And then there's another four on the product management side. And then on the engineering, I think we're at like 22.
Nice.
So yeah, that's the overall team numbers. In terms of culture, we have a cultural manifesto, so to speak. Nice. Fiverr PX as a company, we have specific values, things like always striving, having excellent judgment. But on the product and growth team specifically, that manifesto digs in a little bit deeper. The growth mindset is one of the things that is on there. The other one is actually radical candor. And I do emphasize that over and over again. And people who newly join also get a speech from me on radical candor. And the idea is really specifically to support the growth mindset. You need to, like, in order for you to grow as a person, you need to be getting feedback.
Mm.
And the feedback needs to be timely, essentially. You can't wait for, you know, if you're having
quarterly reviews.
Quarterly reviews.
Yeah, don't have time for that. Yeah.
But it's also just out of mind. By the time you get there, it's...
You forgot about it.
Yeah.
What was that event?
So the main thing is actually to build enough trust in the team that the team members can actually go to each other and pull each other aside and give feedback on a more regular, continual basis.
Right.
And ideally not take it personally. So, you know, if you did a presentation and certain parts weren't ideal, someone else could hopefully be able to pull you aside and say, well, you know, I would have suggested you do this and from there. So part of the culture is actually being able to really appreciate having that feedback and valuing that feedback more so than viewing it as, oh, this is negative criticism and I want to avoid it at all costs. So that's a big part of the manifesto. And the other part of the manifesto is actually reserving judgment a little bit on our peers or giving others the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Because like I mentioned, Fiverr PX has our three lines of businesses. So sometimes we do find that we're really siloed because we're too small for that. But as we grow, we're starting to see, you know, the communication barrier is harder against those three lines. So sometimes I hear people saying, well, you know, I don't know what they're doing over there. Mm. Or they make comments about that may or may not be actually meant as judgments on what other people are doing, but it could be perceived that way. So a big thing that we want to make sure is that even, you know, in the uncertainty or unknown, if you haven't gotten communications from other parts of the team, that you stay very positive and give other people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Because otherwise what you do, and I've seen this happen, you end up in these cycles of, oh, you know, marketing should be doing that. And the community management team says marketing should be doing this. Why isn't community management doing that? And then you end up in this cycle of, oh, things really suck here. They should be doing this. They should be doing that. And really, each team already knows that. It's like marketing knows that there's a gap on this and they're working on it already. Community management also knows that there's a gap on this and they're also working on it already. Yeah. So there's no, so just having that attitude of you know, talking around things isn't helpful. So that's the other thing that we have in our manifesto is just having that trust.
Yeah. And it's a really important, I think it's probably up there in terms of a leader's responsibility. Other than hiring good people, it's creating and cultivating that right culture. Because it does become almost a competitive advantage having the right culture because you're only as good as your people, right?
Yes, yes. Right?
You keep talking about growth mindset and I know I've read…
There's a book called Mindset.
There's a book on it and I've read parts… Is it here?
It's on my desk. It used to be.
Yeah, no, I've read parts of it. And for me, it was one of the life-changing things that I've read. There was an essay on Medium about it from the author and it was really great. For the listeners that don't know anything about what it is, can you briefly chat about it? Because it seems like I've heard it like 5 or 10 times already now in this chat.
Yeah, I think it's just knowing that, I mean, there's different schools of thoughts always about, you know, us as human beings, what makes us who we are, right? Is it our genes that fixed it?
Yeah.
And, or is it nurtured or can we grow? Right. So there's kind of the two schools of thought. If you think it's your genes and you're stuck with these genes and you can't change.
Yeah.
If you think those genes actually just play a part but don't necessarily rule everything, then there is room to grow and to improve. And that book really goes into, and it applies, it's not just for growth hacking or marketing really.
Yeah.
It's actually mostly applicable, especially for me as a parent, to child raising.
Yeah.
Right. It's knowing that your children or people on your team, just because they are how they are right now doesn't mean that they are going to be like that tomorrow.
Right.
It's giving them that space to be able to change and to be able to grow, as opposed to penning them as one thing or another, right? So yeah, I think that's really the concept behind it, is knowing that people can change.
I think people have to be willing to be uncomfortable, to fail, to move towards something that they've never done before, to grow, right? Is that something you look for in people that you hire? Like, what are, if it is, are there other things that you look for and that, you know, oh, I need this person. I really need that person. Outside of the technical skills, like soft skill wise.
Yeah, I think the drive, probably, like the drive to kind of achieve something more extraordinary in life for me is personally always great. And then we all have to personally get along, honestly.
that's funny.
I mean, we're all going to be a team. That person needs to be able to get along with all of us. So that's kind of like the bare minimum. But the other things that attract me, honestly, are people who are excited about the specific business problems that we're working on, right? They actually view those problems as significant things that we should be spending time on. And they're passionate about what they do day in and day out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's so important with getting along. Like I have this airport test where, like, if you get stuck at an airport with this person, would you want to be around them? Or I guess the bar test. Would you want to drink beer with this person at the place, right? I've been thinking a lot about that, about culture. It's funny how this came up because I didn't expect growth marketing to focus on this. I've summarized it in three things. I think you've talked about it a little bit. I like people who are hungry, people who are absolutely driven, like you said. I like people who are humble, like people who, like, they know they don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing, I like people who are happy. They're just so positive.
Right.
I think when you're in that whole growth marketing process and you're talking about sprints and cycles and things not working sometimes, it can suck.
Right.
It can be like, oh man, it's not good, right? Mm-hmm. It's funny how it all came back to circle for me.
Have you read Happiness Advantage?
I've heard about it. I need to read.
Yeah, I love that book.
Top five book for you?
Yeah, definitely.
You read a lot. Like, is there other?
Oh, I try
books,
to.
Is there other books that you would like? You got to read this.
Happiness Advantage from Lean In is another one. Just as a woman in tech.
Cheryl.
Yeah, Crucial Conversations. What else? But then there's also like I think what I call classics like Getting to Friends, Winning Friends Over.
Getting
Past No, that kind of thing. Or like, you know, it's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I'm also a big fan of. What else? Actually, HBR on Leadership series. I actually really like too.
We'll check this out.
Well, I can go on and on. I'm trying to think of what's on my desk and what's…
Talking about growth mindset. You're like living it out, just reading
stuff. Reading is important for you to keep growing, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm not necessarily specific to books.
Yeah.
You know, like blog posts.
Right. TED Talks.
Oh, yeah. TED Talks. There's my favorite type. Amy…
Oh, yeah. Amy Cuddle.
Cuddle, yeah. I love her TED Talk. Yeah.
I forgot what it was about, but I didn't know her name.
Sign language.
Yeah.
And how it affects your confidence.
Oh, it's the… Yeah. The power moves, right? Like certain power poses that you can do.
Yes. But her specific like personal story is what really moved me.
Oh,
right?
I haven't heard it yet.
I won't spoil it for you. You can go watch it.
All right, so all listeners out there, you got to check out Amy Cuddle on TED Talk. We are not getting paid to promote this.
Definitely not.
I'd like to go back to 500 Pixels and even maybe Scribble Live. I want to learn, is there any specific experiments that stick out for you, like growth experiments that really move the needle that maybe surprised you and your team that you can talk about? We don't have to sign an NDA.
In both cases… the stuff that I can share is, in retrospect or in hindsight, it sounds dead simple. At Scribble Live, actually, me moving form fields did a lot. Because we had a very fairly complicated lead gen process.
Yeah.
We were afraid because the more information we collected, obviously, the more qualified we could get the leads before they actually hit the sales team. And that was how they had been operating. But when I joined the team, what we tried to do is actually to take different sources of data and different tools, something like DataNize or data.com, and basically aggregate that data on the user and get to the point where the user doesn't necessarily need to tell us upfront.
Oh.
And by doing that and taking out the form fields, we basically got huge percentage point gains in terms of lead generation.
Yeah. Is there anything you can share from 500 Pixel or is that…
500 Pixels, I would say so far it's been… two-pronged. One is personalization, which again, I don't think surprises anybody. We have lots of photography content, and every photographer's style is different. So being able to recommend the right photos to the right users based on what we know has been giving us lots of gains. So if you look at our site right now, there's a whole For You section, which we just launched in the last month, that has recommendations now, not just on photos, but on places to where to take your photos, classes for you for learning. We're applying basically the recommendations across the spectrum of our product and not just the photos that you can view.
Nice.
And that's been a huge lever in growth. And the other thing I would mention is actually pricing. Because I think a lot of marketers, especially on the growth side, you can call this traditional marketing, but pricing is kind of...
It's huge.
It's huge. But I think also... often overlooked. Our market research actually came back that photographers, and I don't think this surprises necessarily everyone either, they're price sensitive. A lot of the people who are on our site are photo hobbyists, so this isn't necessarily their main job. So as a hobby, you know, there's, you know, how much are you willing to spend on that? So us actually putting out pricing promotions or giving deals to our photographers has been another big growth lever for us.
Nice. I'm curious what's next for you, Sylvia. I know, you have any other plans? Maybe become a VC at some point? I'm not sure. But like, what's next for Sylvia?
Yeah, I don't see myself being a VC.
No, that was just an example.
I am doing more advising in the Toronto tech startup scene. Nice. So I am hoping to kind of get into that more. So if you're out there looking for some consultant, I'm definitely available. Yeah, I think it's just... from a personal growth perspective, I want to be able to see the gambit of the problems that everyone's experiencing and seeing that whether the things that I've applied in various places could also be applied for others, right?
What is it about advising? And for me, I'm going to share with everyone, one of the reasons why I teach is I love mentoring. It's just something about younger marketers coming out of school, and I'm telling them about this world in startups that they're not used to. And there's something satisfactory about somebody getting to where they want to be. And I had a part in it. I didn't get paid for it, but I feel like I'm giving back to the world in somehow. But for you, you're advising. Are you mentoring too? Like, what is it about that part?
I mean, I do mentorship and coaching just as part of my regular job with the team here. But not like anything too formal.
Right.
There's, you know, some talks that I do that I have mentorship components. Well, that's funny. I'm going to be on a panel next month about women in leadership.
Nice.
And at the end of that talk, actually, the organizers just emailed me. There's going to be, you know, 15 minutes sessions of mentorship at the end.
Yeah.
And I signed myself up for that. So when the opportunities come, I definitely take them because I'm kind of like you. I do enjoy doing that and feel the satisfaction of helping, or at least very self. Gratified version of helping, whether the person feels like I helped or not, this is a different story.
It feels good. It feels there's something like you've given back.
Yeah, but the advising is also there's another layer. There's the coaching and mentoring of helping a person, but at the advising level, it's also being able to solve, I guess, larger business problems, or at least helping the business solve the larger problems.
Nice. I know I didn't want to get into this, but you mentioned about women in leadership, and I know things are
happening. Why didn't you want to get into it?
Well, it is a growth marketing talk, right? But I've been reaching out to growth marketers, head of growth, VP of growth, and they're mainly male. And I know things happening with Uber and things happening in San Francisco, things happening with Ellen Powell, right? It's an issue with the tech community, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on that in general.
Well, yeah, I definitely think it's a topic that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
And the more we talk about it, probably the better.
Yeah.
At 500px specifically, it has been a hot topic, I think, not just because of the tech scene, but also because we feel it on our platform. And that's specifically with photographers. The photographer, pro photography, if you look at the history of it, it's historically been a male-dominated industry. And that is actually slowly changing. Actually, the numbers are looking great. There are some numbers now, depending on what reports you look at, that actually have it at a 50-50 split. But that's very, very new. And on our platform, we haven't reached those numbers. From that perspective, well, we've been internally having a lot of discussions on how to, you know, get gender diversity or at least support diversity in general, not just gender, more as a platform. And not just, I mean, there's the for the tech piece, but also just for our community.
Nice. I think it's so important. I think diversity can also be a competitive advantage because I think the whole group think can happen when you have similar people in the room. Mm-hmm. I enjoy it when somebody tells me I'm wrong. I really do because it's part of the group mindset. Like, then you'd have to go back to your belief and your system and your process and say, and address your assumptions
right.
about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so important to have a diverse team, not just like gender-wise, but like overall in terms of mindset and skills.
Mm-hmm.
I want to wrap this up. We're hitting our time. Last question. What advice do you have for anybody who's trying to get into growth marketing? Maybe they're in school or they're in traditional marketing. What any advice that you would have for them, Sylvia?
I think to be themselves and jump in. Going back to the whole point about not being afraid to fail.
Yeah.
Yeah, just try different things. I think the people that come to, you know, our doors at 500px or actually pretty much everywhere I worked, the resumes that stand out are usually the ones where it's clear that what that person is about and what they stand for.
Mm.
There's a large part of knowing what you want out of it and what have you built your life around. Because those honestly are the resumes that will stand out better when you're in a pile of 1,000. So yeah, that would be my advice.
Awesome, Sylvia. Thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I know you're super busy, but I appreciate your time here.
Oh, no problem. This was fun. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care. Thanks for listening in on this episode with Sylvia. I hope you got a lot out of this chat as much as I did. There were a few times in my chat with Sylvia where I was just like, wow, I am learning from somebody who really knows her shit. And I'm just glad to be chatting with her. You know what? If you liked it, why don't you subscribe? Hit subscribe on iTunes or Google Play or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you're already subscribed, sign up for our Insider Club newsletter where I share my latest giveaways, news, and I tell you who's going to be on the show next. And you can just send me your questions and I'll give you a shout out and ask your question to whoever growth person I'm going to talk to next. If you have any feedback or questions, just send me a short email at ramley@growthmarketing.today. In next week's episode, I chat with David Hurley. He is the growth at PlanSwale. And I know when I chatted with him, I was just blown away by this guy. He's a typical growth marketer who knows how to code. I was just looking at stuff that he built. He coded a sales tool using Python and MongoDB. I'm sure that sounds like Chinese or some other language to some of you, but it's cool stuff. He also recently showed me a Slack bot that he coded from scratch to help his marketers and automate his growth process. And he's just an overall cool and nice guy. I'm really excited to chat with David, and it's going to be released next week. Other than that, this is Bramley from Growth Marketing Today, and don't stop growing.